Hi, I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides, and this is Talking to Grandma. We have a special bonus episode for you this week. Last year, our work with the Language Preservation Project took us to Denver, Colorado. As we began to design and think about our programming for educators and families, we met with a lot of great people in the community who all had their own journeys with language preservation and loss. In this episode, we thought we'd highlight the voices of Denver as they share their stories. It was a reminder to us of why we started this work. We hope you take away as much inspiration as we did. Enjoy the episode. We first hear from Denver principal, Nivan Khosravi, who is an amazing advocate for multilingualism at his school, Maxwell Elementary. Even though it's not his heritage language, he's learning Spanish to be able to speak with his students and families in his community. Here, he shares a bit more about his relationship with his own heritage language. What is your experience with heritage language loss or preservation?
Just a lot of frustration and sadness. Mm-hmm. My family is Iranian, speaks Farsi at home. My dad's side speaks Dari. Mm-hmm. And they tried to teach me when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard because learning language is really hard. And yeah. They wanted me, like so many of our families, to focus on learning English, doing well in school. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say they like completely gave up, but it took a backseat. And so, mm-hmm. My grandmother passed a few years ago, and I never could talk to her in her native mm-hmm. language. I mean, she spoke some English, but yeah. It was always really hard.
Yeah. Maintaining a heritage language is hard. There are so many factors that come into play. Here we hear from Amber Suero from Rooted, who shares more about her journey as a mother trying to pass on her heritage language.
I'm a mama, and I experienced it firsthand with my daughter. Mm-hmm. As a single parent, and my daughter being from multiple identities per se. She's half Dominican, half Mexican, but she was born here in the U.S. I found myself having so much trouble into preserving my Spanish language with her, because she did not want to speak Spanish. She saw that as something shameful. She went to a district where language was not celebrated, and where, you know, even her name, her last name, was butchered so many times. I remember that she will come home crying and saying, why are people saying that my name is Levi and my last name is Leva? And that, again, just the societal views on different languages, different pronunciations, different names, seen as a negative. So I struggle a lot in helping my daughter to preserve her language. And it took a lot of work and effort. She's now 15, fully bilingual in reading, writing, and speaking. But it really took a lot of work, a lot of tears, a lot of self also analysis. Right, like how can I be a better parent and supporting her? And one of the biggest things that my mom only speaks Spanish. So my mom would speak to her in Spanish, and she would answer in English. And it was one of those things that it was a shock for me. I felt like a failure when my daughter really didn't want to acknowledge part of our culture and our heritage by not wanting to speak Spanish. So for me, I've seen what we could do unintentionally to our kids. And systemically, I think that education system have been stripping our communities and our families, not just Spanish, but a lot of other non-Spanish speakers, non-English speakers, from their own identities. The system was not built to accept culture and to accept different languages and to celebrate where we come from and our dialects and our ways to communicate. From something as simple as, you know, how we Latinos see food as, you know, it brings us together, and that's not something that we see in certain spaces as a welcoming piece. So for me specifically, I'm super passionate because, one, I lived it as an ESL student, but also as a parent, and I work for Denver Public Schools District for 9 years, working with predominantly monolingual low-income families that came from all over South America. And what we've seen is that level of confusion of people really not wanting to celebrate and acknowledge their culture or their language because of the societal norms that we have now.
The forces of those societal norms are strong. Even when you are working to create a heritage language-rich environment in your home, the challenge is still there. Ángeles Osorio de la Rosa Cooper from Coloradans for the Common Good also shares a bit about the challenges that she faced as a mother.
Maybe as a mother right now, my son already sees the power of language and he's choosing to do more English. Initially, I thought he was just practicing his other language. Mm-hmm. But because of the way it's set up at school, and this is from his teacher, I came in one day and asked very casually, like, so how much Spanish are you using in the classroom? To me, it was clear that they were not using very much Spanish because my son was already not wanting to use it anyway. But I just wanted to confirm, right? I wanted to know more. And so she said, she explained to me that, well, you know, they're not using that much Spanish because she wouldn't know how to transition the English-speaking kids to the Spanish environment. Of course, I had this very physical reaction, and I was like, and what about the Spanish-speaking kids that are probably smaller, and like, what about their transition? So you're saying like, their experience, I don't know. I felt like she was erasing her experience. She's a Latinx lady too, and I think she's a heritage Spanish speaker. But yeah, so power is already like super big in my own experience in the U.S. So what we're trying to do is trying to find those pockets where we can just be in Spanish speaking environments. But it's hard.
Claudia Munoz is a bilingual educator and mother who sheds light on the impact of assimilation, but also provides a path and hope for reclaiming what might have been lost.
You know, I came to the United States as a child. I was 5 years old, and I didn't speak any English, obviously. I think because I grew up in a pretty predominantly white community in Longmont, Colorado, I assimilated, and my family assimilated, and we really lost a lot of our language, and because of that, we lost a lot of our culture as well. So as an adult, I feel like I've had to regain a lot of my language, which helps as a teacher, as a Spanish teacher. I'm constantly learning new vocabulary, but I still feel inadequate. You know, I don't feel like I have my language because I had to assimilate. And it hurts. It hurts my heart that I wasn't privileged enough to keep my language, my Spanish language. So it's just something that I keep working at and keep studying. So I try and speak it every day, especially with my mom, because I don't want to lose it. What I know, I don't want to lose.
Colorado Teacher of the Year, PhD student, and Two Dope Teachers podcast host Gerardo Munoz talks about what language loss and preservation look like in his family. He elevates the role of language in helping us unlock cultural and historical understandings, as well as embracing imperfection as an act of resistance.
Yeah, and I grew up here in Denver, East Side, predominantly black neighborhood. Didn't actually grow up with a lot of other Latinx people or Spanish-speaking people. Both of my parents were bilingual, English and Spanish. My dad came here in 1974, and he didn't have any formal education that I know of. He always said that he had a sixth grade education, but the evidence doesn't really bear that out. And he had gone through a lot coming to the United States, and the big focus in our family was to learn English. That's what he needed to do in order to work, in order to do the things that he needed to do to provide for our family. And so my parents just didn't teach us Spanish. They spoke Spanish when they didn't want us to know what was happening. And so I got kind of that passive understanding. And it wasn't until I got to college and took my first Chicano studies classes and realized that there was a whole world of literature history and activism that I could engage with if I could develop my language a little bit more. And so, honestly, I had to endure a couple of years being made fun of by the Mexicanos who worked in the kitchen on campus, and but slowly building the language and trying to get better at it. And now, 23 years later, as a teacher, I realize I use my Spanish every single day, and I'm always learning it from the kids. The kids say I'm the no sabo guy, and I've learned to embrace it because I know my Spanish will never be perfect, and I'll never speak it in a way that will make me who I was supposed to be. But it's been a journey, definitely. I'm still super insecure about it.
Carolina Villagrana from Camelback Ventures talks about the discrimination and lack of school services that she witnessed as a child growing up in the Denver area, and how she translated that into motivation as a bilingual educator and leader.
When I think about language, it first and foremost starts with how I saw my parents treated. One story in moment in time that stands out, it was a late summer evening, you know, those beautiful evenings where, like, you don't need a jacket or sweater or anything like that, and standing in line at Dairy Queen with my mom as she was talking to a friend in Spanish, and a lady just turned around really quickly and said, "Stop speaking Mexican." And, you know, my mom, God bless her, immediately goes, "It's not Mexican, it's Spanish," first off. But at that moment, it was very early that I started to think, like, is Spanish bad? Like, is there something wrong with the speaking Spanish? And so, you know, with the context of language, and I myself grew up understanding Spanish, but I didn't speak it fluently. And I still say I struggle. But I think what, as an educator, and I stepped into the space of seeing how my mom, when my oldest brother was enrolled into a district school, they automatically placed him in a bilingual classroom, and without my mom's consent or even talking about it. My mom gave it a chance, but she noticed something very vastly different that was happening between the monolingual classroom, where she goes, like, there was learning, and in the bilingual classroom, she goes, nothing was happening at all. It was like daycare. And so she herself had a traumatizing experience of what language looks like for her kids growing up. And so it's been something that I have wrestled with, especially as I stepped into the classrooms, that I never want to my families of, like, students to feel like they felt isolated, that they felt Spanish wasn't an asset. And even to the point where teaching, you know, I taught second and third grade, and one of the things is, like, that's an age of, like, where you should be immersed with reading, and parents felt shy of reading with their kids, and I was like, just read in Spanish, it's okay. And they're like, and they would always ask me, like, well, es más, está bien, es nomás tenemos libros en español, like, we only have books in Spanish. I was like, that's, like, excellent, you should be reading in Spanish, like, I don't care, like, as long as it's, they're being immersed and they're being, and they're being able to practice that, that is something that I wanted to encourage for my students. And so I think because I saw such an absence of Spanish in my life, or constantly questioning the value of it, as an educator, I wanted to make sure it was something that my students in the community are proud of. And so that's how I wanted to show up every single day for our kids.
Landon Mascareñas from the Colorado Education Initiative reflects on the intersections of language and identity and how that connects to nation building. He also reflects on the shame you can feel if you don't speak your heritage language, and the importance of opening up the conversation so that others know that they are not alone and that we can move forward together and heal.
When I think about the story of language preservation, culture, and loss, there are two different stories that I think about. The first is a story of my great-grandma and my grandmother. My great-grandma actually came to Colorado 100 years ago last month, and her experience was to move to Boulder, and then 6 years later had my grandmother, and my grandmother was held back in first grade for speaking Spanish. She was teased for bringing tortillas to school, all the things that we know that a lot of newcomers and refugees or immigrants experience. And because of that shame, she never taught any of her six kids, including my dad, Spanish. They kind of know just enough to kind of, you know, get by sometimes, and that's even probably pretty challenging for them in some sort of circumstances. And so that really is kind of my driving force for all the work that I do with community redesign, which is no matter what a kid, where a kid is, who they are, or where they come from, their identity should be a part of the conversation of how a school system is redesigned. And the community should have a voice in saying, what do we want our school system to be? And for many of our communities, that means honoring the language and identity of the community that is there. And maybe actually starting to arrive. And what does it mean to be welcoming and thoughtful? Because the reality is, with the exception of our first Americans or indigenous communities here in Colorado and New Mexico around this country, everyone who came to Colorado is a newcomer or a migrant in some way. And that's an important realization, even our Anglo fellow citizens. And the other story that I think about a lot was my experience working and teaching on the Navajo Nation and a lot of the indigenous school networks that I had a chance to work alongside, where, you know, they really believe, and I believe this is the right way to think about it, is that language preservation is really intersected with nation building. And what does it mean to build a nation and a culture and identity that thrives, that inspires, that passes along the oral traditions of the past, that connects to the future in a way that people can imagine and see themselves in, that allows the stories of cross time and place to flow through. You know, that's the work of building that better world that we talk about, to allow everyone to build the nation and structure that makes sense for them and their community. And those two stories really connect to me. I think that there is a reality in our community, and I'll say our community because I know that there are like numerous Latino communities and brown communities, how do we build a community that says, look, there was shame to lose your language and now they're ashamed to not have it? And how do we move beyond that shame-based culture into one of, we talked about nation building, culture building, identity building, in a way that is both affirming and long-lasting, and that accepts people to understand that a part of regaining their language is probably going to be a significant amount, and I say this from a very personal level myself, I get very emotional when I even think about this, but you know, how do I process that shame? You know, to me, my inability to learn Spanish over the course of my lifetime connects to a lot of ego, a lot of intelligence questions, a lot of like personal failing. How do I process that? How do I deal with the fact that my family felt all that shame and trouble and challenge? To me, it's not a academic question of how to learn Spanish or learn the languages of our ancestors, but rather one of, you know, it's been a challenge for me in my life, and so what is the deeper thing going on there that I'm gonna have to like unpack in the process of building that capacity? And is it still possible in my life? I'd like to believe it is. I've gotten better at it for some years, then lost it again, you know, and that's a really challenging thing. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes better, you know, it's one of these like when you feel that shame in life, sometimes it's better not to talk about it, mm-hmm. or if we feel like it is. But the reality is it's not. We have to deal with it, and we have to bring it to the open, and we have to be in places and cycles, circles of support to be able to name some of those challenges.
Wow. We are incredibly grateful to the Denver community for opening up about their experiences with heritage language loss and preservation. As we heard from our interviews, preserving your heritage language is hard in a society that values and is designed for assimilation. Yes, the journey comes with challenges and shame, but it also comes with joy, fulfillment, connection, and hope.
We were taking part of a speech from a former leader, and this person really shared her experience in losing the connection with her abuelita, with her grandma, how she couldn't speak with her grandma, and because of a lot of the norms she had a little bit of an accent when she was growing up, and she was literally, she said that she was put in a library with English literature so she can lose her accent, and she completely lost her ability to speak Spanish, and therefore she lost her ability to communicate with her grandma. So this person like was emotional and cry, and my daughter felt compelled and actually saw herself in this person, because my daughter loves her grandma. She loved her abuelita, and she wouldn't want to lose that connection. So I think that that experience really brought her to a point of acknowledgement that speaking another language is actually beautiful and is part of who we are, and there's no shame. I even explained to her, I was like, did you know that you can make more money if you're bilingual? So now we're in such a better place, but it really took a third party acknowledging and seeing the pain on somebody else who looked like us, who has the same name, a similar name, the culture that we come from, who could not communicate in Spanish because of the way that they were brought up, and their experience in losing that relationship with their grandma. So my daughter really, that took to heart. And seeing that somebody else was in pain because they couldn't communicate, and that could be her case if she continued to, you know, push away from learning or continue to embrace Spanish. Now she's like the biggest Bad Bunny fan, and there was actually an article in Westworld that she was quoted on. I gotta say, the music also, for as much as we want to acknowledge or not, certain genres, like it really helps to bring culture into our households, how people identify, and for her, you know, she loves Bad Bunny and his quirkiness and the music, so she has acknowledged also and celebrated our culture through that lens. The last that I'll say, now she's, you know, fluent in Spanish and writing, reading and speaking, but also she's taking Japanese in high school, which is way more difficult than Spanish. But how this experience actually opened up the lens, the language is beautiful that we need to celebrate, and how are we encouraging celebrating other cultures as well?
Somehow I was Carol in grade school, Carol all the way throughout until I got to college. And there's this professor, and you know, once I went to my legal name at college, it was Carolina, and I introduced myself, and it's Dr. Paul Encinas, and he goes, what Carolina? He goes, it's Carolina. And he had me practice it a few times, and you know, it just made me finally proud of like who I am and the journey of like my name and even my last name, Villagrana, and just how one person who could look like you could really change the your view of being proud of yourself and your culture and your background.
A lot of people like me who want to speak Spanish and struggle to learn and keep our language alive in us. I see for me, Spanish is a language of love, because it's a language of my family, of my culture. And I see that for a lot of people, you know, it's their love language, and I think it's important to you know, to keep this project, you know, just really touched me, because I feel like I'm the only one. I feel like I'm alone in that thought, but maybe I'm not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, language is the key to everything, culture related, and you know, I'm teaching a Latinx history class, and one of the things I've been able to emphasize to my students is that, you know, if you speak Spanish as one of your languages, you can actually access a lot of historical perspectives and documents that would be hard to access if you only spoke one language. And so being able to intermingle the English and the Spanish has been really great with kids. And in fact, today in class, I read to them in English Julio Cortázar's short story Graffiti, and which he wrote during the Dirty War in Argentina, and it's just this really interesting thing. And one of the students had asked if they could read it in Spanish, and saying that, I wonder if there's just something different in Spanish, it's not the same story. Reconnecting with language as a community allows us to address our colonized past and present, and and can help us build confidence and build this connection to our history that for a lot of kids isn't there. It wasn't there for me. I had to go and claim it. Where it is a language, is a sense of belonging. It is a legacy. It is a way to connect across generations. And I think that it's a source of confidence that you can have this when you come into a space and actually understand what your community's been through, what your family's been through, and that, like with your story, I'm like that it wasn't your fault.
Yeah, I just feel like it's about like language recovery for me, you know, it's recovering what was lost.
I had an experience one time where I was essentially called out in a very public place for not knowing Spanish. A good friend of mine told me in that moment, she goes, "Landon, you know, yes, you're not fully fluent, but she's like, I'm fully fluent, and I still get people telling me that I don't say things appropriately, that my accent's too thick, that I don't speak in the way that I should, or I speak too white of a version of Spanish." She's like, sometimes, you know, there really is no winning on this, and you have to just accept who you are and come into that and embrace that. And a part of embracing who you are and a part of that journey that you're a part of is saying, back to this like shame question, is that I'm gonna like release the guilt or shame I have for not being something else, but really embracing who I am. And that's challenging. Yet it is, I think, the struggle for a lot of folks when they're talking about their Latinidad at the intersection of language.
Thank you for listening to this special bonus episode of Talking to Grandma. A special thank you to all of the folks in Denver, the ones featured in this podcast episode and beyond, who opened up their homes, communities, schools, and hearts to talk to us. Do you have a story of language loss or preservation that you would like to share with us? Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. That's .co, not .com. Or find us on Instagram at Language Preservation Project or Talking to Grandma. Share your story, and we may feature it on the next episode of Talking to Grandma. And that's a wrap for season one of Talking to Grandma. Thank you so much for tuning in and helping us elevate and celebrate stories of multilingualism and language preservation. We have almost hit 1,000 downloads. Help us hit this major milestone by subscribing to our podcast and sharing it with your friends, families, and colleagues. Your ratings and reviews help us keep the podcast lights on. If you enjoy the stories that we bring to you and want more, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform today. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project and sponsored by Onward. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara. And I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next season.